Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, 7 canto, chapter 10. Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees, text 51. Sa esha
Bhagavan,
Rajan,
Yatanot,
Vihatam,
Yasha,
Pura,
Rudrasya,
Devasya,
Mayena,
Ananta,
Mayena.
Sa esha
Bhagavan Rajan,
Vyatanod Vihatangyasa,
Pura
Rujasya
Devasya,
Mayena Ananta
Mayena.
My dear King Yudhishthir, long, long ago in history, a demon known as Mayadhanava, who was very expert in technical knowledge, reduced the reputation of Lord Shiva. In that situation, Krishna, the personality, the supreme personality of Godhead, saved Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is known as Mahadev, the most exalted demigod. Thus, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that although Lord Brahma did not know the glories of the supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva could have known them. This historical incident proves that Lord Shiva derives power from Lord Krishna, the Parabrahman. Om again at Tirmidandasya, again on Janashalaka, Shapshun Militam Yena, Tajmai Shri Gudame Namaha. We're getting information about Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Saesha
Bhagavan,
the same Personality of Godhead who Narada Muni has been speaking about in the preceding verses. What did he say yesterday? Exalted persons like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma could not properly describe the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Now we're going to get some corroboration, some illustrations. We're going to hear about, particularly about Lord Shiva, and how Lord Shiva, although he's so exalted, he's dependent on Lord Krishna. Just like we have our Shivananda Das. What is the Ananda of Shiva? The Ananda of Shiva is his bhakti to Krishna. Impersonalists, they don't understand. They think Shivananda means Lord Shiva's own bliss, as if he's independent. But actually, the bliss of Lord Shiva is simply that he is Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He's the greatest Vaishnav. And he's always engaged in chanting Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari. That's his specialty. Yesterday we heard that may the Lord, who is always worshipped as the protector of all devotees by great saints who observe vows of silence, meditation, devotional service, and renunciation, be pleased with us. And today we're hearing about that same personality of Godhead, Saesha Bhagavan, Rajan, my dear King Yudhishthir. I'm going to tell you more about that same supreme personality of Godhead, who is indeed always worshipped by great saints who observe these things. What are those things the great saints observe? Who worship Bhagavan? Mona, silence. Samadhi, deep meditation. Bhakti, devotional service. Upashamena. That refers to renunciation. These things are all components of the Krishna conscious process. And we have been discussing the past few days how you cannot cook with smoke, you must cook with fire. Krishna consciousness is a process. It's not a question of your beliefs. It's not a question of your being a good club member, card-carrying Hari. It's all about the process. That process includes mona, silence. How is that? It's not that we practice mona vrata, the vow of silence, like impersonalists. They become famous in India for not speaking a word in 20 years. People are very impressed. He's a mona baba. His baba has not spoken in 25 years. Oh, he must be realized. Prabhupada would turn that on its head and say, for most of those mona babas, it's a good thing they don't speak. That's a great service to the world that they keep their mouth shut. But we actually also practice mona vrata, or we should be. What is the mona vrata of a Vaishnava? To only talk of things in relation to Krishna, to only speak things that are meant for Krishna's service. That's a necessary ingredient of Vaishnava life, cooking with fire, not smoke. So yes, we do observe vows of silence. We don't speak every silly little thing that comes to our head. We don't, in the contemporary context, we don't put into emails every silly thing that comes to our head. Yeah. These days, so many offenses are generated by email, and the offenses can multiply thousandfold instantaneously with one click of a mouse. So the email has brought technological advantage as well as disadvantage. It can be used to whip around the world instantaneously thousands of rumors and offenses, and everyone's consciousness becomes implicated. Mona vrata for a devotee means a vow of silence, that I don't say anything that doesn't contribute to Krishna's pleasure. Back in the days when there was just telephone, devotees brought up to Prabhupada some idea for some kind of newfangled communication system. I don't know what it could have been back then. Maybe it was telex. They're suggesting perhaps all the temples be linked by telex. You don't even see a telex machine anywhere these days except in the antique shop. Does anyone remember a telex machine? Yes, you probably in India and Sri Lanka, they probably have them, yes, for business. Yes. Anyway, telex machines, yes. They're really odd contraptions, weren't they? These huge, big machines. So, Prabhupada heard about it and said, what do we need this system for? Devotees will just use it to gossip. We can see his prediction was correct. So there was just telephones back in the 70s. Then, in the late 70s, 78, 79, a few temples had telex machines. Finally, but in the early 80s, the fax revolution started. And then, of course, the internet came, email. But I remember back in the days when it was just the telephone. Rates were high. The phone companies hadn't, especially in the States. I don't know about Australia. The States was just one monopoly, AT&T, before they were broken up by the government. So phone rates were high. So devotees just, you know, they didn't call that often. Basically speaking, only the temple president would have access to the telephone. Everybody else just never called. Rates were high and, you know. Anyway, the point is, a devotee does observe mona vrata, vows of silence. You think before you speak, how will this add to the pleasure of the Lord? What about meditation? Samadhi. Actually, you can only understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead properly when you are in samadhi, deep meditation. What is our samadhi, deep meditation? To be absorbed in service to the Lord to such an extent that all our natural instincts are submerged in that service. The highest perfection of that is shown by the residents of Vrindavan, who loved Krishna so much that all their natural instincts were absorbed in him. That's why in Vrindavan there's nothing spiritual or material. There's no question of division into spiritual or material. Everything is simply saturated and fully absorbed in Krishna. Even the homes of the gopis. There's no dichotomy between home life and spiritual life in Vrindavan. Everything that goes on in Vrindavan is simply meant 100% for Krishna's pleasure. That is samadhi. The residents of Vrindavan actually show samadhi. Far beyond the samadhi that is generated after many thousands of years performing the Ashtanga yoga system, the yoga system of eight limbs. The goal of that yoga system of eight limbs is to produce samadhi, absorption, on the super soul and the heart. But bhakti yoga immediately brings you in contact with the origin of even the super soul. It brings you in contact with Krishna and absorbs all your senses, including the mind, in Krishna's service. For example, Prabhupada said that book distribution is samadhi, in that when you're doing it properly, you're simply thinking how this person can be connected to Krishna's glories. He writes in the 10th canto Bhagavatam that in our Krishna conscious movement, all our activities culminate in the distribution of transcendental literature. And this is samadhi. Devotional service. Bhakti, yes, we've been talking about that. Devotee means devotional service. To be an official card-carrying member, well, that's not very much. Better than nothing. But to be an actual realized devotee means your life consists of devotional service. Then you can attract others, because through devotional service you are manifesting the attractiveness of Krishna. Did that lady yesterday pay for her Gita? Yes. So there was an example yesterday. This lady, she's a Christian lady, she came to the Sunday program. It was her first time. Looking, thinking, she had gotten a little book, a higher taste of a book distributor some years ago. And she remembered. She's a seeker. So therefore, immediately we recommended to her Bhagavad Gita. That's a very special moment when people come, and like flowers, they start to open up. Right at that moment, the honeybee comes. So you really have to have an acute sensitivity to when the searchers are opening up. Because material nature may not allow such an opening for many lifetimes even, again. Devotees have a great responsibility how to deal with such people. Krishna is sending them. Krishna sent her. And the petals of her flower opened. Oh, what is this? What's this all about? So right at that time is a very delicate and special moment when a devotee has to expertly, you know, come along like a honeybee and do the job for Krishna. So you have to be very alert to notice when someone's flower is opening. Then Krishna will send you more. When he sees you taking care of what he has sent, then he'll send more in the future. But if the devotees are simply very wooden-headed and selfish, you know, just thinking about themselves, they'll never notice these opportunities. After a while, you become skilled in how to administer the nectar of Krishna consciousness. You can notice when people are manifesting, even in a quiet way, when they're manifesting readiness. For example, yesterday I saw her listening a bit attentively right in the front. I figured, Maybe she's just a regular guest. I thought she was a mother of a devotee or something like that. Anyway, I just fired a test, you know, missile past her ears, you know. Got a good reaction. Uh-oh. Then you take it as far as you can at that time. So immediately I said, oh, you need Bhagavad Gita. And she agreed. And then I offered to communicate with her to discuss her reading of Bhagavad Gita. That's service to Srila Prabhupada. Not only distributing the book, but offering your services to encourage someone to read the book. That's more service than just distributing the book. Of course, first you have to distribute the book. But the increased service is, can I help you discuss the book? Because you don't want the person just to take the book home and not read it, even though having the book at home is having Narayan in their home. You want more service. That's the point. We want to do more service. Okay. Yeah, let's discuss. Show them how Bhagavad Gita comes to life. Renunciation, the last element mentioned here. Yes, a devotee is detached from everything that doesn't foster Krishna consciousness. In today's verse, we are entering the history about Maya Danava and Lord Shiva, in which Lord Shiva had some difficulty subduing these demons. And Krishna himself came to save the situation and save Lord Shiva's prestige. This demon Maya Danava is known as being very expert in technical knowledge. Mayina. Far more expert than in technologists of today. The things Maya Danava could construct and manufacture, no factory can do today. He did the Sudharma Assembly House in Dwarka, didn't he? Was that done by... Or does that come from? That was him. Huh? I believe he did the Sudharma Assembly House in Dwarka. You say so? Yes? And he made for the demons three kind of UFO cities that were invisible. Although possessing such technical knowledge, he was a demon. Yet you'll find out in his history that although he was a demon, he could recognize when the situation was out of his control, out of the demon's control. He recognized the hand of providence. So even although he was a demon, he was far more advanced than the demons of today. Technical knowledge without Krishna consciousness simply causes problems. Have the lives of the people today really improved because of technology? No, the quality of life has deteriorated. People are simply working harder. Their lives are full of more stress. You notice anytime you get some so-called gadget that produces conveniences, you have to learn a manual of instructions just to operate a calculator or one of these, you know, pocket electronic dictionaries. Or everything is so electronic and complicated. How much of that can you learn? Just like the mobile phones. Everybody knows that most people only use like 20% of all the functions of their mobile phone. It's just too complicated. No one uses all the shortcuts and this is and that's and fancy buttons. And very few. In this way, people's minds are constantly besieged by having to learn how to use the conveniences. Just like, what are the things, besides mobile phones, the other famous example, video recorders. So intricate. But people think, oh, we're advancing. In Krishna consciousness, we are concerned with the quality of people's lives. Therefore, we are teaching a spiritual technology so that people can seize back control of their life. This is the revolutionary thing we're doing. People are besieged and overwhelmed and inundated with so much. When I was a boy, television consisted basically of 4 or 5 channels only, even in a big city like New York City. Now everywhere, even in India, people deal with a minimum of 64 channels. What a load that puts on the brain. So many gadgets they have to learn just for the kitchen. This is how you work the dishwashing machine. This is how you work the electric mixer. What else is in the kitchen? Microwave. So many gadgets, you have to learn them all. Then there's the television, the video recorder, the stereo. You can't just have a stereo system anymore at home. You have to have a home entertainment system. Otherwise, you're just nothing. When I was flying from Calcutta to Bombay, at the Calcutta airport, they had an altar in the waiting room before you get on the plane. And this altar was enclosed in glass, and it revolved. And bright light shone on the deity. And what was the deity encased in glass revolving on the altar? The deity was a clothes dryer. And a big sign on top proclaimed the magic mantra which this deity would invoke. The mantra was, no more clotheslines. Now you can have a clothes dryer. No more clotheslines. How dare you be so primitive to hang your clothes on the line in India and expect them to get dry in the cold weather in India. No more clotheslines. You now in India have a clothes dryer. How many months in Calcutta in the year would your clothes not dry immediately hung outside in the line? So, the capitalists are thinking, India is 1 million people, 1 billion people, the last consumer frontier, India and China. If we get those people to feel they need clothes dryers, then we can go on producing like anything and earning money. So they make the people feel insecure. You hang your clothes on a clothesline. How uncivilized, how backwards. This is the problem with India, hanging the clothes on lines. One devotee was telling me that the U.S.-based multinational firm, Kellogg's, the ones that makes the breakfast cereal, they're in Australia too. Yes. They have invested millions of dollars into India. You know, bringing their products, especially cornflakes. And they said publicly, we're ready to take a loss every year for 20 years, but we know within 20 years we will change the breakfast habits of India, even if we take a loss every year for 20 years. That's the determination. Could you do Krishna consciousness with that kind of determination? I'll take a loss every year for 20 years, but I know that I'll be Krishna conscious. No. What's Krishna going to do for me? What's the temple going to do for me? But these capitalists, they're so determined and they're willing to sacrifice and take a loss to win in the end. This is the state of the world today, and it's nothing unusual. That's what this history of the Bhagavatam will make known to you. In the past, there were demons with far more technological knowledge than what is possessed today. And you're going to hear an extraterrestrial account. This history of Maya Danava and the demons and Lord Shiva involves different planets. It involves the whole universe. In this way, Srimad Bhagavatam presents histories from millions upon millions of years ago, different regions of the cosmos. The histories presented in Srimad Bhagavatam are not presented in chronological order. That's not considered very important. After all, from the viewpoint of someone like Shukadeva Goswami, what goes around comes around. Existence is cyclical. Creation, annihilation, things just repeat in terms of the cycle. So why worry about the chronological order of things? But in Western understanding, the chronological order of things is very important. Why? Because they see history as linear, a straight line. Very much influenced by the Judeo-Christian concept of linear time. There was the Jesus, and then things move from Jesus dying on the cross till the coming again, the future coming of Christ in the future. So everything is a unique event. Jesus' unique appearance to the unique future when he comes again. So things are moving on a straight line. Whereas the Vedas see things as a cycle. What goes around comes around. Kali Yuga is here now. Kali Yuga will go and come again. So therefore, persons like Shukadeva Goswami don't worry so much about chronological order. Because they know there's no straight line. It's a circle. Samsara. A circular, a blazing fire that moves in a circle. Any questions?
Just a comment when I was working as a refrigeration mechanic. I used to go to these places with all those gadgets that, you know, everything can work. But I'd never be greeted by the owner if he had working, except in place of a week of petrol. And then when you read him at any time, to actually use these things.
Yes. It was quite common 40 years ago, that even an ordinary middle-class housewife wouldn't work. She'd stay at home and take care of the kids. That was quite common. In Australia, it was like that 40 years ago. Yes. I know in the States it was like that. My parents weren't rich, but my mother just stayed at home and raised the kids, and my father went to work and brought home the money, and that was the way it was supposed to be. Now, only the wealthy can afford to live like that. And even they, you know, the wife doesn't want to stay at home, and even though they have the money, she wants a career. Stay at home and do housework and take care of kids? No, I've got a right to a career just as the man does. It's not a question of money for them. It's a question of, you know, I'm going to be a primitive woman staying at home raising children. So this is what's going on. The quality of life has not improved by technology because the people haven't improved. And we can see even devotees, they get affected by technology. They get overwhelmed sometimes. Overwhelmed by the internet and email. What a profound sociological change the internet has brought to ISKCON. Someone coughs in Perth and you hear about it, you know, in Siberia. hear the latest. Someone coughed in Perth. All the devotees in Siberia start talking about it. Was it a dry cough or a wet cough? Everything becomes very heightened and reduced. The time and space become reduced. Everything becomes a hyper event. You know, like, have the internet Vaishnava Lonely Hearts Club. When you enter your application, you know, for, you know, and, you know, see if somebody responds for marriage. They kind of upgraded the name of that now to the Vedic Marriage Conference or something, but it used to be known as the Vaishnava Lonely Hearts, Krishna's Lonely Hearts Club. And people with, devotees would send in their dossiers, you know. Look, I'll be honest, I have no intention to follow the regular principles. Looking for a spouse who has the same mentality. Yeah, I know persons who've done that and gotten responses. Yeah, that's my program. Right now in Australia, there's a married couple. That's how they got together. I'm not going to tell you where, but, you know, the guy just, you know, sent in, you know, to the Lonely Hearts Club. But, yeah. Now, this is where I'm at, you know, purely into Sanskrit. You know, I hope one day I'll snap out of it. But for now, that's the program right now. Anybody, you know, interested? He got responses and he married one of them. So in this way, you can see that technology has had a profound influence on the society of devotees. Understand that nothing will compensate for your own lack of Krishna consciousness. Don't try to fill the time and think because it's internet amongst devotees, therefore it's a devotional activity, one of the nine processes of devotional service. Shoving them, kirtan them, emailing them. Anything else? Yes?
If you're using Krishna's service, you can have that.
Yeah. Yes. You have to make sure it's for Krishna's service. Not that, well, I'm a devotee, therefore anything automatically anything I do is for Krishna's service because I am a card-carrying member. So every time I touch the computer keyboard, it's Yukta Vairagya, automatically. Because I am a devotee. That means automatically anything I do is real renunciation. Anything else? All right. Hare Krishna.